It's been almost 40 years since the Vietnam War ended. No longer America's most unpopular war, by the way, if you saw that poll. It's still very real in the minds of the veterans who fought. Some of those vets went back to live there. Others seek closure or solace for the violence they experienced. Experts estimate that tens of thousands of vets have made such pilgrimages. Bellingham resident Richard Brummett is one of those vets. He has returned to Vietnam many times since he was there as a soldier. He sat down with Ross Reynolds to talk about what has driven his return visits.
How did you end up in Vietnam in 1967?
I joined the U.S. Army in 1966, having traded in a gold-plated draft deferment for 3 years in the U.S. Cavalry, and took tank training at Fort Knox and then volunteered for Vietnam.
Why did you turn in that deferment?
Well, I was from a very severe military family. It almost would have been shameful to be drafted during the war, and certainly to hide behind a draft deferment if there was an actual war going on.
How did your career in Vietnam end in 68?
I finished up my year. My last scheduled day in the field was June 23, and finally hit a landmine that day. And because I was so close to my time to leave, July 10th, and because my replacement was there and trained by me to be that driver of the tank, I did not have to go out any longer. I left Hill 29, and that morning, the 5th of July, I saw my tank go off on a multi-day patrol and bid goodbye to my friends, including the driver of it. 30 hours later, we heard that they hit an enormous landmine and everyone died. And having no one to turn to, I snuck back to Hill 29 to seek out someone I could share the grief with.
Did you find that someone?
I did. There's a wonderful moral soldier named John Guzik III, who was the gunner in my tank and by chance wasn't on that tank the day it blew up. And we spent the night sitting on top of a bunker looking at the stars and talking.
I can't imagine how it would have felt and knowing you would have been on that tank when that happened.
And he. Mm-hmm. We were otherwise destined to die together. But we did not.
You came back to the United States. You went to college. But as I understand it, you really missed Vietnam.
I did. I know this sounds ridiculous. I was homesick for the war. I missed the excitement. I missed the camaraderie.
What's the excitement? I think it's sometimes hard for people who have not served to understand why it is exciting and why there's that draw.
Well, the first motor vehicle I ever drove was a 52-ton tank. I learned to drive on that. And going through the countryside, knowing that there are groups of intelligent young men out there whose sole purpose in life at that point was to ensure my demise, there's a certain thrill to that.
You returned not in the Army. How did you get back to Vietnam?
Well, I had trained myself a little bit to be a photographer in college. I just bought, all I could afford was a one-way ticket to Saigon, flew there, and presented myself to MACV's Just POW office, and they laughed me out. So I went around to all the offices of news organizations in Saigon and had to get two letters from these people saying they knew me, knew my work, and expected to buy photographs from me. And if it wasn't for Horst Foss, I would not have gotten accredited.
Who is he?
Horst Foss was a Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer and then photo editor at the Associated Press in Saigon. And once I had a letter from him, the next place I found said, oh, well, if Horst says you're okay, you must be. So here's the second letter. So to the astonishment of the Navy commander there, they had to accredit me.
How did you convince Horst to write you a letter of accreditation?
Well, my time as a soldier.
So Horst might not have known much about your skills as a photographer, but he knew that you knew what it was like to be a soldier and what it was like to be in Vietnam.
Correct.
What did you do once you got your accreditation as a photographer?
Well, Cognomilio was haunting me.
He was the guy who was driving the tank that you would have driven?
That's correct. When he came to the cavalry, he wasn't trained as a tank crewman, and the first sergeant said, Brummett, you take care of this guy and train him. And I told Scognamiglio that if he stayed on this tank, he'd survive the war, because tankers don't die. But I lied to him. But I did the best I could for him. most of his body was left behind. It burned all day, and it got dark, and they had to leave the area. So all they did was they picked up as many fragments of person as they could to make four crew members and a passenger. And what they found from Scognamiglio was just his left hand and his eyeglasses.
What did you see when you found that tank again, and what was going through your mind?
Well, I had heard that the turret had blown off, which was unprecedented in my experience, but it was still shocking to see a 52-ton tank upside down, turretless. The hull had warped from the heat or the blast or both, and there was a crater there from the landmine big enough to put the tank back in and cover it over.
You wanted to go back to see this tank that these men who you knew had died in. You got there, you saw it. Did you find what you wanted to find when you found that tank?
I did. I found most of Patrick in the driver's compartment. No, it was him because his dog tags were there. Much of his skeleton from the shoulders down. And so we put him in the deer earth and covered them over and put a set of road wheels on it as a grave marker and said goodbye.
Did you feel as though your personal mission was completed when you had done that?
That mission was complete, yes.
This was your second time in Vietnam, first serving, the second time going back to bury the man who you found in that tank that you would have been in, and then you returned again. What prompted your third visit?
Well, I dropped out of college and went by bus to Vietnam, and just because I enjoyed being a photojournalist and did that again until April of 1972 when I was wounded in the Easter Offensive up at the DMZ. And so called it a war and went home. And then the next visit was not until 2006. And this was a different mission.
What was it?
One of the horrible things that I saw as a soldier was this platoon sergeant pick up an old man, marched him over to an open well, and dropped him in. Then he dropped a hand grenade into the well to follow. Afterwards, he looked down and was cursing because the landmine had sunk too far beneath the water before detonating, and the old man was still alive. And so he took his .45 caliber automatic out and emptied the magazine into him.
Why did he kill that man?
This old man was scolding Sergeant Boyd and had been wagging his bony finger in the sergeant's face and chattering something obviously unpleasant in Vietnamese. He was being killed for lack of respect. So I wanted to find out the old man's story. What was his situation? Well, I know his name is Tran Van U. I found out from the local political authorities that Mr. U was, in fact, the head of Viet Cong military intelligence for that area. He wasn't killed for being a Viet Cong. And in any case, you just don't murder prisoners or apparent civilians who are giving you lip. But that's what happened.
You went back again in 2010, and you started something that's called the Chocolate Ceremony. What is that?
Oh, whimsy. In 2007, I made contact with a village, very good contact. It turned out that this was a pro-American village right across the railroad tracks from Hill 29, our tank base. So just something struck me that I think I'll bring some quote-unquote American culture to them. And I told them the story that there's a custom in America to have a chocolate ceremony every spring. And I brought them a 4.5 kilo chocolate bar and a ceremonial American chocolate hatchet, bought at the local hardware store, had it engraved at Bay Engraving, saying in Vietnamese, American chocolate hatchet.
So you just made up the ceremony?
I made it up entirely. It's a bunch of donkey dust, complete. But one thing led to another. And the second year, I had a banner made 3 meters wide in Da Nang that says, in Vietnamese and American, second annual American chocolate ceremony. We're up to the fourth. The fifth is scheduled for next March, the 9th.
What happens at the ceremony with the hatchet and the chocolate bar?
Well, the ceremonial American chocolate hatchet is taken out of its leather case. And the banner is put up in this grove of trees near this old farmer's house. And all the children circle around. And when Mr. High swings this hatchet and makes contact with the chocolate bar, And children are watching very closely. They're supervising this action. And it breaks it up into chunks, and we have these one-gallon Ziploc bags, and they get a chunk of chocolate, and two little packets of M&Ms, a toothbrush and toothpaste, a floss stick. Well, this silliness, it's okay, but perhaps more useful to them, I've established a very small, so far, scholarship fund for children in this village. So 8 total we're putting through kindergarten through high school.
Richard, I understand that people might hear your story and think that's so unusual. But from what I hear, it's not that unusual. There are other Vietnam vets who go back like you do.
Yes.
Have you encountered them?
Oh, certainly.
And what are they doing? The same sorts of things that you're doing, trying to improve lives for people who were there?
Some who I haven't quite met, but they're running their own nonprofit organizations. I think one teaches children how to swim. A lot of specialized stuff. There are Americans who simply live there. They've married a Vietnamese woman, and they live and then they die in Da Nang. Every Saturday night at a certain beachside beer garden, there's a gathering of English speakers, and we get to know each other.
You're going to go back again, and what do you look forward to about that trip?
Well, I intend to go every year, every March, doing the volunteer photography for my 4, so far, nonprofit organizations in Da Nang, and having the American chocolate ceremony and looking after my students.
That was The Record's Ross Reynolds. He was talking with Richard Brummett. He's a Vietnam War veteran who's made several return trips to Vietnam since serving the Army there in 1967.